A very moving a cappella rendition of a classic Haitian song, Wangolo, composed by Richie Trimble. It's a plea to an ancestor believed to be Angolan or Congolese, wanting the ancestor to stay behind and not leave. The lyrics say, Wangolo, you're leaving. When will you come and see me again? When will you come and see me again? The country is changing. Our situation is changing. When will you come back and see me again? This was recorded in 2005. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today we turn our attention to hell and after hell, 8 more years of hell. Tomorrow marks the 8th year after a catastrophic 7.0 magnitude earthquake with an epicenter just west of Haiti's capital city, Port-au-Prince, shattered the afternoon calm with the strongest tremors to strike the region in more than 200 years. At least 52 significant aftershocks were recorded up to late January that year. The disaster pushed Haiti, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, beyond the brink, compounding the political and economic crises that had dogged the nation for decades. The quake left some 3 million people affected. A government estimated 316,000 people dead, almost 300,000 homes and commercial buildings in a state of collapse or severe damage, and the entire nation gripped by sorrow and wondering whether they could survive the hell they were living in. But after the hell of 2010 came 8 more years of hell, as we are going to discuss today. Our guest is Dadi Sherry, a Haitian-born journalist, poet, playwright, professor of biology, and co-editor-in-chief of the news site newsjunkiepost.com. She writes extensively about Haiti. She wrote, in fact, the first story uncovering Haiti's hidden mineral wealth and revealed that UN peacekeeping forces were responsible for not just one, but 2 different strains of cholera outbreaks that killed thousands of Haitians and sickened thousands more. The UN finally admitted to its responsibility. She has followed closely the deeds of corrupt Haitian leaders, as well as the deeds of Bill and Hillary Clinton in Haiti. Her recently published book is titled, We Have Dared to Be Free, Haiti's Struggle Against Occupation. And I thank you, Dadi, for being with us today. Obviously, you have a lot. you don't do much with your time.
Thank you for the invitation, dear Tracy. It's good to be back on Lead Stories.
Thank you so much. Well, let's start from the opener. I say that because I think there are at least 5 or 10 things that I forgot to mention you are, in fact, in the process of doing. But you certainly have the distinction of being a very attuned reporter on the issues concerning Haiti and the forces being exerted upon it. So there was hell, and then there was 8 more years of hell. Let's talk about the 8 more years.
Well, the earthquake basically left Haiti confused, helpless, and in mourning. And as Haitians mourn their dead, Haitians also lost their voice. Haitian voices were basically gagged. And what you got instead was Bill Clinton on the TV and everywhere, and Paul Farmer, his deputy special envoy to the UN, and he was envoy to the UN at the time. And they were doing all the speaking for Haitians. And of course, what they told everybody to do was give money. They were everywhere asking to give money. And in fact, they managed to raise a lot of money. But different people were raising money for Haiti around the time. And what Bill Clinton did immediately after that was to set up this, this organism called Interim Haiti Recovery Commission, and basically force the Haitian parliament to vote a state of emergency so that this thing could come into existence, which was basically a group of rich donors led by Bill Clinton, to whom all the aid money would come, all the foreign aid would come. And come it did. They had all sorts of donors conferences, and they eventually wound up with more than $9 billion. And at the end of it all, really they could account for only 3% of it. And we still don't know where any of this money went. And I say this every earthquake, that Haitians are still looking through the rubble for the aid money and not finding it. And so anyway, Haitian reconstruction, there was no reconstruction. There was the big project that took the 3% was a huge sweatshop complex called Caracol Industrial Park. And it was not anywhere near the earthquake. It was in northern Haiti. And it employs only a few thousand people. And for very little money, they make about 65 cents per hour. And that's what was done with the aid money. And for this, about 1,000 farmers were put out of business. And an area that was pristine was destroyed. And so this is the more disaster that Haiti gets. But there were also, in terms of politics, Haiti was gradually unraveled. Almost immediately after the earthquake, there was the cholera epidemic. So the earthquake was in January. The cholera epidemic started in October. And so you had, again, more deaths, more confusion, with the UN, of course, saying it had nothing to do with it up until just last year. And it contaminated Haiti twice. It kept bringing more peacekeepers. First, it was the Nepalese peacekeepers who introduced the cholera in Haiti. And the way it was done was really gross negligence, because they took the Nepalese troops to train in Kathmandu for the summer, of 2010. And then they gave them 10-day leave. And all this happened in the middle of a huge cholera outbreak in Nepal. And then after that, they brought them back to Haiti without really giving them a serious medical exam and set them up in a base where the sanitation was really marginal. And so that their wastes were actually being dumped in a river. And so this is how the epidemic started. The whole thing is really horrible. And they have not really made amends to anybody. But worse than that, even after that, they brought in Bangladeshi peacekeepers. This was a group of Bangladeshi police, and there were women. And the whole idea was, well, they were going to bring Asian women, and there wasn't going to be, of course, there's problems with rape and sexual, assorted assault. So these women weren't supposed to do any of that. But what happened then was that they contaminated the country with Bangladeshi cholera. And the Bangladeshi strains of cholera are actually even worse than the Nepalese. They are antibiotic resistant, and the UN hasn't even acknowledged that second infection. But what I have done is actually I've gone and looked at all the different places where you have UN missions, and in almost all of those places, cholera has appeared. And so Haiti is not the first place they contaminated, and it was not the last. And I suspect it was after I exposed this that they began to start, worrying about taking responsibility for the cholera and all this kind of stuff, giving lip service to apologize for the whole thing.
But in the meantime, thousands of people are dead, at risk of death, and there's no compensation.
No compensation. Over 10,000 people are dead. Over 100 times that have been infected. No compensation at all. None.
I want to go back to a central issue here that you raised earlier, and it concerns Bill Clinton. In fact, right after the earthquake, the leaders of the Caribbean region had voted for P.J. Patterson, then the Prime Minister of Jamaica, to actually head up the effort, the relief effort, and the rebuilding effort. And Bill Clinton saw to it, he just got him kind of kicked out of the running, even though Patterson had been named by the leaders of the region as a respected person of the region, the idea being that they thought that for all kinds of reasons, even to symbolize that the Caribbean was able to take care of itself and take leadership in a matter this grave. But Clinton smelled lots of money. We still have Haitians in New York City assembling outside of what used to be Hillary Clinton's office, demanding to know where the billions of dollars went. We have no answer yet about that. So I just wanted to make sure that we understand Bill Clinton came into this process as a marauder. Dislocated P.J. Patterson, got him out of the way, and then took personal possession of this, knowing that billions and billions of dollars were to come into Haiti for a rebuilding effort. I understand that they actually succeeded, if I could use that word, building something like 13 houses, which are laughably inadequate.
Oh, yeah, right. Yes. Wherever there have been houses built, very often there have been like shells of houses. No running water, no electricity, nothing. Just something that looks like a house from outside with nice little colors. they treat Haitians as if they are retarded you know, that there are children. Never mind, they're children. And yes. That if you make a shell of a house with little colors, they'll like it. They'll think it's a real house. But Clinton just basically elbowed everybody out of the way, including Haiti's president at the time, René Préval. He formed this IHRC thing, and it had two groups. It had a group of foreigners that was headed by him, and it had another group that was headed by Haiti's prime minister, which was Jean-Max Bellerive at the time, but who was really under him. And then the Haitian group, well, first of all, it had fewer people. And then the president was not even in it. The president actually was supposed to have only a symbolic vote in this IHRC thing. And people complained afterwards. They couldn't even get into the meetings. They were told they were not on the list. When Haitian senators and various other people tried to get into the meetings to see what was going on, they could not get in. So this is what happened. But to bring back this whole UN, because remember, Clinton was UN special envoy and he worked with the UN through all this. And the UN made sure that Martelly was got elected president.
Okay, that's Michel Martelly, who was known prior to being president as a kind of wild entertainer, famous for showing his bare butt on stage and making lascivious moves on stage.
Yeah, well, not only his bare butt, but yes, they had to, when they ran him for president and then dressed him up with his little suit and so on, they just cleaned up all the videos that were circulating around of his various antics and his various admissions. It is amazing that this could be done, but there are still photos and there are videos. There are videos still circulating around. But anyway, Martelly was the guy who was supposed to basically set them up, let the UN run the show without interfering, and then go and ask for renewal of the UN every year, which is what he did. But what Martelly did also was to he got rid of every other elected person in Haiti during his administration. All the mayors, all the governors, which we call departmental delegates, were removed and replaced by his appointees. And then he let the mandates of the parliament expire, so that by 2015, Martelly was it. He was the only elected person in Haiti when we started out with about 1,500 elected people before that. And so Haiti's government was basically completely dismantled. And it is still dismantled. So when we had elections in 2015, this was for everything. It was not only for president and for parliament. It was for every mayor, every governor, and so on. And this time, there were, well, the great majority of those positions were replaced with crooks. You had a situation where, in the run-up to the elections, you had the candidates themselves committing fraud, committing acts of arson, shooting on other people, and so on. And in fact, it was a way for them to sort of hide and get protected from prosecution, because when you're in government, you have immunity. And so this is what we have now, and the elections were completely fraudulent. Now, the thing I want to stress, though, when I talk about Haiti, is that people never gave up fighting. People fought. And in one set of elections that were in 2015, they were verified and thrown out. And then after that, they tried to have more crooked elections. They were boycotted. And I should point out that when they verified the elections, they found out that more than 70% of the vote had been made up. It had been, you know, it was fraudulent. These were people who were stuffing ballots. And not only that, but they concluded, well, they stopped short of concluding it, but it was very clear to everybody that the people doing the fraud were probably the election observers. So this is what had to be done to try and take control of Haiti. Nevertheless, they continued with the elections. At one point, the candidates for the presidency just said they wouldn't run unless the elections were done better. They did the elections, and they were still crooked. And I examined some of the voter sheets and so on. The changes to the voter sheets were just incredible. The fraud was so blatant. It was unbelievable. But these are the elections that have now brought us Jovenel Moïse as president, and almost brought us this guy Guy Philippe as a senator for Grandence, which was the southern department. He's now in a U.S. prison after having been convicted of money laundering. Actually, they were going to convict him of trafficking drugs. He pleaded to money laundering, and he got a lesser sentence.
But hold it right there for a second.
People we have now.
Hold it right there for a second. I want to go back a little bit on the timeline here. So Bill Clinton succeeded in getting P.J. Patterson out of the way so that he has sole and total control of all aid money, all money coming in to rebuild Haiti, and it's in the billions of dollars. Nobody knows where the money went. At the same time, his wife was Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
And as Secretary of State, leading up to where you just left off, Hillary Clinton personally installed Martelly as president of Haiti, did she not?
Yes, she did. She did. The elections, the first round elections in 2010 had come up with Jude Celestin, Milan Maniga as the top two candidates, and Michel Martelly, I think, might have been number five or something like that. And then she marched into Haiti and said, "We count it. We don't think this is right. Make Michel Martelly one of the finalists." And this is basically what happened. The OAS did a recount, the Organization of American States. And then they, and Martelly, basically what they did, Jules Celestin was actually winning. And then they decided that they were going to get rid of any ballots over some certain number for every poll station. So they basically reduced his vote to such a degree that Martelly got into the running.
And with her blessing, because she's the Queen of America, and everybody believed, well, hey, if Hillary Clinton says Martelly is okay, Martelly is okay. At the same time, her brother ends up with a rare gift from the Martelly government, and that is a license to mine for precious metals in Haiti. You pretty much discussed this and laid out the considerable wealth of Haiti in terms of its mineral deposits. How did Hillary Clinton's brother end up with this rare rarely issued license to mine gold in Haiti?
What it is this happened around Christmas 2012, I believe. And basically what they did was they went and spoke to the director of mining, who actually answered to the Haitian Senate, but they did it over the Christmas holidays. And they were granted these mining exploitation permits. So there were two different companies, one Canadian one and one I think called JVC that was based in the United States, where the Haitian Prime Minister and the former Haitian Prime Minister and Hillary's brother were on the board at the time, and so they got their mining permits, and I caught wind of that as it happened over the Christmas holidays, and I wrote a piece about it. When the Senate came back, the Senate invalidated their mining licenses. And they're still trying, of course. They're still continuing to try and get hold of the gold in Haiti.
Is there an estimate, Dadi, as to what kind of money? We know it's in the billions, but how many billions of dollars remain unaccounted for that Bill Clinton swore on everything holy that was going to be used and directed to rebuilding Haiti, as he said, bigger and better? How many billions of dollars remain unaccounted for that we know of?
Well, basically, $9.9 billion were given to the HRC, and 3% of that got used. So it's basically $7 billion.
Almost $10 billion, to round it off.
Yeah, basically almost $10 billion is missing. And $10 billion would go a long way in Haiti toward reconstructing the country.
The president has not been able to account for that, neither at the international level, although he was a representative of the United Nations over this rebuilding project. There's been no accounting from the U.S. government saying, well, wait a minute, because the U.S. money also was involved, what did you do with $10 billion? And we have no idea, because the Clinton Foundation was one of the conduits for a lot of money going into Haiti. We have no accounting for that either. So the money is magic money. It just kind of disintegrates and nobody knows where it goes.
Yeah, I suspect a lot of the money has been used to finance the presidential campaign. There are ways to finance a presidential campaign where you, if you finance it yourself, you don't have to account for it. But I suspect that is you can blow a lot of money on a presidential campaign. I suspect that's what that money was being saved for.
But not $10 billion worth of financial campaign.
Well, the estimate, at least when I read it just before the elections, was that the last U.S. presidential campaign was supposed to cost about $5 billion for each candidate. And I've seen no accounting for that. None at all.
We're talking with Dadi Sherry, a Haitian-born journalist, poet, playwright, and biology professor and co-editor-in-chief of the news site newsjunkiepost.com, as we look at what has happened in the 8 years since the devastating earthquake hit Haiti in 2010? And what is the status right now in Haiti, and where do people find answers to some of these very puzzling questions about where the money went? Lots and lots of money flowed into the rebuilding and relief effort in Haiti, but it remains unaccounted for. And not only is it pertinent and is it important to ask where the money went, we see that the promise of building a massive rebuilding campaign, and there was money at the very least to start it and get it going. We got just a few houses, as Daddy just told us. They're shabby, they're brightly painted, and that suffices as replacements for living in tents and living on the street. So, Daddy, let me ask you, when you look at it as a Haitian, I mean, I know you wrote your book, We Have Dared to Be Free, Haiti's Struggle Against Occupation, with great passion and also with great accuracy with regard to a sense of history. What do you as a Haitian person feel when you look at the plight of Haiti?
Well, we are paying for having been the ones who fought against slavery and for having won that fight. That is really what it's about. The former colonists have returned and are trying to make Haiti a free-for-all. France, Spain are all over Haiti right now. And, of course, the U.S. and Canada are in Haiti, too. Canada has ambitions of getting a piece of Haiti. And so everybody, almost everybody's had to fight for their independence more than once. You had Cuba, a whole bunch of countries. Their first fight against Spain, and then they have to fight again. And this is what happens. This independence is never won. It's an ongoing struggle. And so I see it as the ongoing struggle for independence. As much as I see it as part of our history, as part of the fact that we successfully did it once. And the fact that we successfully did it once, I think, is enough so that anybody who looks at this can say, if we could do it when we were slaves, we can do it again. And so we can never, ever give up that fight. It is extremely important. We have been a kind of a beacon of the movement against slavery, the movement for human rights, and we were there when everybody was giving lip service to the rights of man and so on. We actually are the ones who step up and said there is no place for slavery in the rights of man. And so we have a situation now where people are talking about slaves in Libya, Haitians are being exported as slaves to other countries and so on. It is completely unacceptable. It was unacceptable back in the late 18th century, and it's unacceptable now. And this is the fight that we started, and this is the fight that we must continue. They are coming back as a group, and we must also fight as a group, gather the troops from everywhere, and fight against this as a group.
What kind of fight had to be waged against the Obama administration?
Oh, my goodness, the Obama administration. Well, the Obama administration basically continued. They basically just had, they gave Clinton carte blanche with regard to Haiti. they were basically setting up Haiti for Hillary Clinton administration. You know, you had the Clinton-Bush initiative and so on and so forth. And every year, MINUSTAH was renewed. There was really no pressure put at all on the UN to make amends. I mean, there are a lot of things that an administration can do that they did not do at all. The situation was more; it just got worse and worse and worse. And Haiti has been under tremendous pressure to revise its constitution in various ways to suit an occupation. Currently, for example, a president's term is only five years, and he cannot do two consecutive terms. Someone else has to come in. He could do another term, but not immediately. Someone else has to come in. So basically, what we have now is Michel Martelly has left. We have in Jovenel Moïse as a place warmer, and Michel Martelly will probably come back in 5 years, unless they just basically change the constitution and say a president can serve multiple terms. In which case, Haiti will be stuck with these bozos and criminals for like more than a decade. By which point, everything will be sold off. Now, the earthquake happened just near Port-au-Prince, which is a heavily populated area, and which is the most populated area in the country. But what has been devastated since the earthquake is the entire country. Because the reconstruction has been all over the country. And to reconstruct something, you first have to destroy it. And so what has happened is that they've done things like, for example, destroy the whole municipal water system all over the country. And then grant contracts to French water companies to rebuild it. And the same thing is happening with the power, with the electrical system. The whole country is being wrecked and supposedly rebuilt. But whenever it gets rebuilt that way, first, it isn't done right. And secondly, a meter is put on it. Like, for example, they formed this outfit called DINEPA that was supposed to basically just centralize the whole water system of Haiti and rebuild it because supposedly it needed rebuilding. And then all of a sudden you started having sabotages of water systems, all the major cities and even smaller cities. And then they hired these French companies like Veolia to come and fix the water. But they didn't fix the water. What they did was they set up a trucking system to deliver water to people because they found out that poor people will buy water in small amounts and pay more per gallon than actually more prosperous people can buy the water in larger quantities. And so now we have water being delivered all over Haiti in trucks, in big trucks. It's being, and the municipal water systems are dysfunctional. So this is just an example of the kind of stuff that's been going on. It's basically, it's like for the mining, they basically say, you're poor, and they're trying to rip off the gold. And so they give people the impression that all of Haiti is a wreck, and then they proceed to wreck all of Haiti.
So, as a result of the earthquake, hundreds of thousands of Haitians were given temporary protected status to come to the United States and live while ostensibly the rebuilding effort was going to ensue. The Trump administration decided, as you know, that he would put an end to temporary protected status and just send people back home. What has the reaction been, and was this, and I have to ask it very, very openly here, was this an inevitability in terms of the Obama administration understanding very well the loopholes of temporary protected status. We had the Obama administration not doing very well with regard to family reunification, separate from the earthquake population that had moved to the United States under the TPS provisions. Apart from that, is what I'm saying, the Obama administration was slow in processing Haitians, in particular with regard to family reunification, which is not an exceptional thing. It is a normal thing, except it wasn't working at the pace it was supposed to work at. So yeah. Combining, is there reason to suspect that the Obama administration fell short in making sure that any provisions extended to Haitians under such duress would have ironclad, would be ironclad and not be open, as it clearly has been with Trump, who says time to send them all back?
Okay, well, I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to give a little background about the situation in Haiti now in terms of what's happening with people. Okay, before I go to the question about, before I discuss TPS. Okay, so right now there are about 50,000 internally displaced people still from the earthquake, and 4,200 people who are living in shelters since Hurricane Matthew in October 2016. Now, according to the UN report, just before it switched from MINUSTAH to MINUSUS, which I hope to talk about a little bit, they're trying to make themselves look good because they're saying, well, you know, we did all this great stuff with MINUSTAH and so on. But they had to report that there were 2.35 million people, and I quote, severely food insecure, meaning this is in a country of 10 million, meaning there's a famine, okay? And 143,000 people are severely malnourished, all right? Now, with regard to immigration, here's what's going on. 192,000 people have been returned to Haiti from the Dominican Republic between June 2015 and May 2017. 192,000. Okay? Meanwhile, Haiti has been shipping off its professionals. Over 100,000 people have now moved to Haiti, to Brazil and Chile, and Ecuador. These are professionals, some of the teachers, lawyers, etc., students, people who have finished high school and want to get and would want to get advanced degrees, and political activists who are very often granted visas as a way to get rid of them. So, but what the country gets out of this is it expects to get about $1,000 per person that it ships out per year. Okay, so Haiti was getting about $2 billion per year from remittances from Haitians that are abroad, which is about 20% of its GDP. Okay, so, and there were supposed to be 2 million people abroad. It's increasing that number. The country, you have a government that is so corrupt and so non-nationalistic that it will ship off its own people as a way to get money. This is what is happening. Okay, so now with regard to the TPS, you had Haitians who came here right after the earthquake, and then they were given this temporary protected status, which is really terrible. You accept somebody, somebody comes in, you either don't expect them, or, you know, they apply for some kind of legal status, and then they're on track to, they either get rejected or they are accepted. This temporary protected status means that these people are basically a basket of people that you can use to political ends whenever you feel like it. And this is what's happening to those people. They're being used as political pawns. So the Haitian government gets threatened with getting 50,000 of those people back, and they will grant whatever it is that is wanted from them. Because each one of those people means $1,000 a year. That's really what this discussion is about. This is Obama was playing this game, and it's still being played. These people are generally being abused and being used.
So it isn't that it's on a humanitarian basis that they are being welcomed and given for humanitarian purposes a place to kind of stay and until things get better. It is, as you say, part of an international, a global pawn game, with these people's lives being very, very expendable, and they can be used for political gains, depending on which way the administration wants to go. This administration wants to communicate to its political base that we don't want immigrants, especially if they happen to have dark skin. And
that's right.
This way, the Haitian TPS people have they're perfect to be used to indicate to the right wing that Trump is kicking all these illegals out.
Yes, that's right. And those who want to get to help these people shouldn't be asking for an extension of the TPS. They should be asking for a regularization of the status of these people. They should be able to. These are people who worked in the United States for years, who have children in the United States. They should be able to apply for a green card. It shouldn't be a temporary protected status anymore. And if there is anybody who has committed crimes and so on, I can understand that they might, the U.S. might not want to keep them. But people in good standing should have a chance to become just normal residents of the country.
So, in the minutes that we have, let's talk about what is the challenge now to activists. What is the prospect that we could see any kind of a significant turnaround this year?
I still believe that what people need to do is basically shut down the entire government of Haiti and keep it shut down until there is a change. The government there discussions of the government as if it's a real government, I think, are really out of place, because it is a government that came about through fraudulent elections. It has to go. It has to be replaced by a more legitimate government. And under no circumstances should it be allowed to revise the Constitution, which is what it's doing now. Now, I'll give you an example of what these people's priorities are. Okay? Now, MINUSTAH has reduced its troops in Haiti from its personnel in Haiti from 6,500 to about 1,600.
We should mention that MINUSTAH is the UN peacekeeping forces.
Yeah, UN mission for destabilization, I call it, instead of stabilization of Haiti, and they've been replaced by MINUSJUST, which is. So October 15, MINUSTAH was gone, and October 16, it was replaced by MINUSJUST, which is a UN mission for justice assistance for justice in Haiti. But basically, it's a name change. They have what they call 980 police in form police units. They don't call them troops anymore. They're form police units. And then they have 295 individual police officers to distinguish them from the form police units. and they have 350 civilian staff. But what this is, even though the number has gone down, what this, they still have Chapter 7, which means they can use force, and they have no departure date. And the police are actually residing with Haitian police, and there are more than 15,000 Haitian police now. Okay, so they have basically merged the UN force with the Haitian police force. And then on top of that, this current administration is talking about a new army. And they inaugurated this army, of all insults, on November 18, 2017, which in Haiti, this is the anniversary of the Bataille de Vertière, which is the battle that finished the French and gained Haiti independence. They marched these people around on last November 18th. Another thing they're doing for this earthquake anniversary is they are inaugurating a new Haitian national, they're groundbreaking for a new Haitian national palace as another insult. This is a national palace that was built during an early U.S. occupation of Haiti from 1915 to 1934, was built in 1918. So as all of the real independence disappears, you now have this sort of a fake independence, you know, the fake national palace. So this is, and they are going to spend $40 to $50 million on this palace. I have written actually a play, a satirical play that's titled "My Palace, My Palace," and it's just weird to see this happen because at the time of the earthquake, René Préval, who had kind of he lost all control and he went out screaming, "My palace, my palace," because the Haitian National Palace had got destroyed. And this kind of became a joke for a lot of people who were, especially kids, were saying, "My palace, my palace." But this idea that there's so much that has gone wrong, and you have this group of people who are thinking of building a palace, I think that alone should disqualify them for any kind of government position. I think rather than focus on people, who's going to get elected and so on, I think people will have to focus on issues one by one, on real reconstruction, on what's going to be done with the economy of the country, on preventing any kind of change to the constitution while this illegitimate government is in place, and so it's going to be one thing at a time. But I think that's what it has to be. No more elections. No more waste of time with just whether it's going to be crook number one or crook number two. It has to be a more real focus, more serious attention to the running of the country, and never mind who is there.
Well, that brings us to the end of the program. And I want to thank you so much for giving us a snapshot today of the critical issues that have ensnared Haiti these last 8 years. And I hope, along with you, that there would be a way to reverse much of the damage in this coming year. But there's no question that after the hell of 2010, Haiti has gone through 8 more years of hell. Thanks so much for being with us today, Dadi.
Thank you for the invitation, Yotris.
All righty. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis, a great program. You want to stay tuned and listen to that. And you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of the program today. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.